All right, hockey fans, listen up, because we've got something special cooked up for playoff season. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge, and it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now, here's the deal. Every playoff game, you're going to be faced with a handful of questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle, and it's free to join. And there are prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? Daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards. Treat yourself to some nation gear or maybe even your favorite jersey. And for the big dogs, the people who can win an entire round, it's straight, cold, hard cash. We're talking about real dough for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Sign up today and play every game day at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Good afternoon, Canucks fans. Back at the Wall Center, it is Canucks Conversation, and it is going to be an electric episode of Canucks Conversation. And that is not just because Canucks Conversation is brought to you by the all-electric 2023 Toyota BZ4X, but I'll tell you about it anyway. The BZ4X is Toyota's brand new all-electric SUV that is designed to go the distance for you and your family. The BZ4X is packed with Toyota's coolest tech, but it still has that trusty SUV feel you know and love. And even though it's electric, it's capable of effortlessly conquering any terrain, whether it's rain, snow, mud, or your friend's questionable post-game recaps. The BZ4X will get you through it all. And as mentioned, we're coming to you from the iconic Wall Center in downtown Vancouver. Looking for your next meeting space? Contact the Wall Center for all your event needs at sales@wallcenter.com. Harm, sun is shining. Playoffs are six games away from playoffs. As you can tell, I'm feeling pretty amped about it.
Yeah, and a nice response game. I know the scoreline was close, but anybody watching the game, I think, can agree that the Canucks controlled play and were, especially when you consider the context of it being the second leg of a back-to-back, far superior than that close scoreline would indicate, especially through the first 40 minutes. To limit Arizona to 7 shots at one point late in the second period, they were controlling play, they were generating chances, especially in that second period. We've had this conversation earlier at times about, okay, maybe there are times in games where the Canucks control possession, they have the territorial edge, but they aren't getting quality looks, maybe, especially from the slot. They had those quality looks. And if it wasn't for Connor Ingram playing really well between the pipes through the first 40 minutes, I think the Canucks were honestly unlucky not to score more than one goal.
That's an interesting take on it, because I just looked at it and I guess I knew that Connor Ingram played well, but I also looked at it and said, come on, these are the Arizona Coyotes we're talking about. Like, put the hammer down and do it. Go get it done. Quinn Hughes gets it done. We're going to talk about him a lot on today's episode, but a remarkable game for Quinn Hughes. Scores the goal, gets me one step closer to a steak dinner from Faber at Eliza there. I was looking at their prices, man, it is expensive. Eliza or Elisa, however you say it. It's expensive. It's very expensive. So I'm really hoping
Were you expecting it to be cheap?
No, I wasn't expecting it to be cheap. Look, the steaks he's sending me are like $500.
Well, not all of them, are they?
Well, I don't think Faber and I set a cap. We didn't set a salary cap. So the deal was dinner. I don't know. I know if I win, I'm going for the I'm just kidding. No, we'll probably set some sort of cap.
I mean, you're only 4 rules away now.
You know what's interesting? Sidebar. Al Murdoch told us, because we ran into him on Sunday, Al Murdoch was telling us that the chicken is really, really good at Eliza. And he went with his wife and it was sold out. He said it was sold out. I've never been, so I'm very excited. First time I go there is going to be with Chris, this not my girlfriend, but
you're just going to be buttering Chris up. Like, ooh, I know that chicken is sounds really good. Have you seen
the fries?
And it's also not $500.
Have you seen the French fries? Those look really good. If I'm you, I just order French fries just by themselves. And look, if you get no salt, it's even cheaper. Okay. No. We'll have something. We booked the reservations for April 18th. Last day of the season, I think. The regular season.
Yeah.
We booked it. We're going to go that day. That's our day. Anyways, getting off track here. Captain Quinn is the big subject of today's show. And that is because he had a monster game again, really. Like, I thought he's really stepped things up, especially when you look at this season. We've had so many discussions about how visiting media comes in and they say, wow, Quinn Hughes is looking remarkable. And you're like, oh, this is one of his bad games. Like, yeah. This is him looking average. This is Quinn Hughes not looking at his best. Right now, he's playing at his best. And again, for all the conversations we're having about guys like Elias Pettersson, JT Miller, maybe not being at their absolute best, playing the best hockey of their season, I don't think it's crazy to say that Quinn Hughes is playing among the best hockey of his season right now.
It's remarkable because, of course, he's got three of the team's last four goals as a defenseman, which already is sort of wild. But there's also just that intangible element of he's a captain now, and he has the mentality quite clearly, especially with this Arizona game being a must response one after that blowout against Vegas, of I want to put the team on my back. Like, there's been that element of extra responsibility. Again, I had a conversation with him at the start of last season where he spoke about wanting to embrace more of a leadership role. And one of the things that you could just sense speaking to him was that he felt responsible for more than just himself now, right? That, okay, I've established myself as a top defenseman. I've got the big contract. He already at that point last season was the longest tenured Canuck defenseman. Now it's okay. It's not just me. It's how do I propel this team higher? And that's where it's the best way to put it. He's put the team on his back, not just offensively, but what always strikes me is he can pull off those unbelievable moves at the offensive blue line, absolutely dancing, shimmying guys, spins. And yet there's no risk in all of that. Like, all of it is within his comfort zone. That's the wildest part, is 95% of NHL defensemen couldn't even dream of trying or attempting the types of moves that Hughes executes because they fear turning it over. Hughes as last man back, for the entire season so far, maybe it's happened, but I can't recall one instance where he's trying one of those fancy plays, he turns it over, and it results in, let's say, a breakaway or an on-man rush against. That's the crazy part to me, is you get all the upside of an elite game-breaking offensive defenseman without any of the perceived risk.
Yeah. And I think I thought about that exactly what you're saying. And I tried to think about how many, like, crucial mistakes has Quinn Hughes made this season. I think for most defensemen, you could say it's at least like in the 10-20 range, like mistakes that directly lead to goals. I think you have one hand, maybe two hands. I'll give you your second hand to count how many mistakes Quinn Hughes has made this season. The point is, there's not been many, but man, I really don't think I can think of five off the top of my head where I'm like, ugh, yeah, bad body positioning, bad turnover with the puck, trying to do too much.
Bad pinch or
bad
something.
Bad pinch, exactly. Like, that stuff just see Darnell Nurse the other night? Oh, we didn't even mention it. Aaron Bordado is our producer. I didn't even mention it. Aaron, noted Oilers fan. How's your boy doing? I heard he's pinching already. Pinching back to Edmonton, Aaron. Can you bring yourself on?
I don't want to when you talk like that, and I don't want to have to talk about it. I did the post-game show last night. I already did Oilers Nation. I already went out back and buried the tape on last night's game. So it's done.
So for those that don't know, Aaron's our old producer. All of last season he was here. He's an Oilers fan, does a lot of really solid work over at Oilers Nation. And he was joking with us a lot because he's been on for like three shows this season where he said, we were like talking about tanks and how awful the team was for all of his tenure on the show. And now the team is first in the Pacific. And I was telling him that those were the conversations we were having on this week's show, was, oh my gosh, the Oilers might catch the Canucks. And then they go out and just take a dump in Dallas. And oh my gosh, that pinch from Darnell Nurse. I can't get over it, Aaron. I can't get over it.
I can't either, Quads. I've only watched it 1,000 times since it happened, and it was a really bad game for Darnell Nurse last night, and he tends to be the whipping boy in Edmonton because of how much money he makes. It was bad. That was one of the worst I've seen in a long time. It's all fun. Enjoy first place in the division. I think that I've kind of given up hope now for that. So I'll see you in the second round.
That'd be fun. That'd be so much fun is seeing the Oilers in the second round. Of course, seeing you and all our friends over at Oilers Nation. But man, I am glad I don't have to deal with you and Bag Milk calling me and telling me that, hey, the Oilers are first in the Pacific. They finished it off. And the Canucks looks like, Harmon, that they're going to see this through with the Oilers losing last night. Not even how they lost, just the fact that they lost. And then the Canucks winning their game. It looks like the Canucks are going to be able to see this through.
Yeah, especially even from a playoff perspective. Look at the number of games Edmonton plays right up until the end of the regular season. And because they have the McDavid factor, there's a decent chance they may end up opening game one on Saturday night. Whereas the Canucks would obviously get the Sunday. That looks like that might be a possibility, just kind of gaming things out, not from anything I've heard definitively or anything that I'm reporting, but it would make logical sense. And to think that they'll potentially face a Vegas team that is now rolling and could get Hurdle and Stone back, like, it's going to be tough sledding for the Oilers.
It is. And look, like, obviously in a matchup of Edmonton versus Vegas, I'm rooting for the Oilers. Like, I don't want to see Aaron sad. I want the Oilers to beat Vegas. Where do you stand? Oilers, Golden Knights. Who would you want to see? Who do you think is going to win? Because honestly, if I have to predict a winner of a Edmonton Vegas series, like, if I'm putting on just my vibes cap, how this team in Vegas is rolling right now, probably going with Vegas. And hey, like, if the Canucks met Vegas in the first round, I would also probably say Vegas at this point.
Yeah. I also think Vancouver has a better chance of beating Edmonton in the playoff series than Vegas. I like the stylistic matchup better, right? Because Edmonton isn't a tight team defensively. They have moments where they don't allow a lot, but their goaltending and their defensive play, especially on the blue line, Darnell Nurse definitely being among them, is cause for concern. And I think, yeah, I mean, of course, with Edmonton, you have the challenge of shutting down McDavid and Draisaitl, but I would rather that than Vegas, who I think is the more complete team and definitely more stout defensively.
Yeah, Edmonton all the way. We're rooting for Edmonton on this show. We'll see. The playoff picture is going to continue to shape out, and it's going to be very interesting to follow. Okay, we were talking about Quinn Hughes. We were talking about the game. We're going to talk about Quinn a lot more in our third segment of today's show, where we're going to size up the Norris Trophy race. 6 games left. It's been a two-horse race all season long between Cale Makar and Quinn Hughes, who has pulled ahead. I think you can guess that we're going to talk a lot about Quinn Hughes, but you actually have some numbers. And this is the funny thing. I brought this up, and I know we're talking about in the third segment, but I have to bring it up. I was thinking to myself, okay, I think it's Quinn Hughes, and I have a vote. I'm voting for Quinn Hughes. But I was wondering if the analytics would suggest that Makar should win the award. And briefly, we were chatting. You don't have to dump it all out right now, but we were talking before the show, and you were saying, no, like, a lot of the analytics are in favor of Quinn Hughes. And I was like, perfect, because in my mind, the best analytics are the ones that help me prove my point. So it's good to know that I don't have to cherry pick. It's just like all of them. So anyways, that was good to hear. But we'll get to it in the third segment. Anything you wanted to say about last night's game and Quinn's performance specifically? Because I have stuff on Archer Seelovs that I want to talk about.
Yeah, I'll quickly mention that there has been also a difference lately in terms of a shot first mentality, especially picking up with the power play. And I'm not just saying that because he's been scoring goals lately. You just look at the shot rates. He's got 12 shots on goal in his last 3 games. The 3 games before that, he only had 2 shots on goal. So he's been more assertive. And it reminds me of that first month of the season as well, where that's when he came out lights out as well. And a massive part of that was, okay, Quinn Hughes, we always knew he was leading the offensive zone as a playmaker, but now it was, geez, he's an assertive shooter. He looks dangerous as a scoring threat himself. That, I think, is part of him getting back to his peak that was maybe not as prevalent before this recent stretch for a while, was him looking really, really dangerous as a shooter. And I think that's a big part of the power play starting to get back on track the last few games as well.
Yeah, that's another thing I think we've talked about with last night's game is the power play. Their first power play of the game failed to get set up, looked absolutely awful. Second power play, they started to just get pucks on net. good things began to happen. I don't want to dissect the power play too much, but it's becoming less of a concern, especially when you look at the fact they've now scored in three straight games. And again, I've been harping on the power play a lot in recent weeks. You want this. You want them to at least, they don't have to be humming and they're a threat every time they go out on the ice. You'd like that, especially heading into the playoffs. But what we've seen recently in the past three games compared to where they have been the past 2 months, it's night and day. And that's what you want to see. You want to see some growth. You want to see some progression. And that's what we're seeing right now from the power play. And we're hoping that that is going to continue. Quickly, before we get to Dave Hall, I wanted to talk about Archer Seelovs. I thought he was a rocking goal. I thought he played really well. Like I said, against the Anaheim game, he should have had a shutout in that game. In my mind, he had a shutout. So if you look at his save percentage and you don't count any of the goals he let in against Anaheim, it's really good. Seelovs is playing really well. Even with those goals, if you live in reality, he's played really well. And I thought last night, he was really steady in terms of his positioning and everything. And there were a few instances where I thought he had not put the puck where he wanted to, like on a rebound. His rebound control wasn't tremendous, but his ability to anticipate seems much better than it was last season. I think that's the thing that we're seeing when a goalie makes these steps, is their ability to anticipate the play. There was one instance where he made a great save on a cross crease pass, but basically what happened was, and again, not to pick apart Casey DeSmith, because I don't want this to become a DeSmith versus Seelovs thing, but with DeSmith, there were a couple instances where it'd be a cross crease play and Smith would come flying out, sliding right out of the net and just come flying towards who he thought was going to be the shooter, and then broken play, the Smith's way out of the blue paint, and then the puck gets rammed in. There got to be a better way to say that. But Archer Seelovs, on the other hand, he had really solid post-to-post movement. He wasn't coming out of his crease too much, especially like those cross-crease plays. It was, okay, I'm facing a shooter this way, I'm pushing off, and I'm anchoring to my post, right? It's
he's not overcompensating.
He's not overcommitting. He's not overcommitting on any given play. And I think that's the thing that I saw from Seelovs that I liked so much. So I think they should be starting Seelovs. Like I think at the very least it should be a split between the two goaltenders. I think you start him next game. Like, I think you reward him for how well he's played, but I also am cognizant of the fact that that might send a message to the room and to Casey DeSmith, who you may actually need in the playoffs, that, hey, we didn't like how you played against Vegas and we're going to go with Seelovs. I think you have to be careful how you deliver the message, but I think it's going to be hard to say that Seelovs shouldn't get the start next game.
I'm sort of leaning that way as well, especially because now he's done it against a couple of lower quality opponents in Arizona and Anaheim. Can he do it against a tougher opponent, right?
Yeah.
I think he's earned a shot for sure.
Yeah. And you also have to think of it through the lens to some extent. And I know we have to live in the here and now. But you also have to think about, I'm not trying to drum up controversy or anything, I'm really not, but the thing that comes to my mind at least is that Casey DeSmith is an unrestricted free agent this offseason. He's going to be looking for a raise. The Canucks were hoping that Archer Seelovs would be ready to take the backup role this year. They went out and got Smith for this year. I'm not saying that they're not going to extend DeSmith and they're not going to be able to come to an agreement. I'm just saying that if you're the Canucks and you do lose DeSmith, it makes it a lot easier to stomach if you know you have someone in Seelovs who, hey, last year we saw him five games. He got better and better. This year, we've seen him through X, whatever he finishes with, games, and we liked the way he looked. We think he can back up Thatcher Demko for next season. I'm just saying that it's something that I think the organization has to at least be thinking about, and it's for sure on their radar. But again, they have to worry about this year's team. So it's such a fine line. I would start Seelovs, but I think I would be very careful of how I'm presenting that to the team and how I'm presenting it to DeSmith and just making it clear that, hey, this isn't a knock on Casey DeSmith. This is just we're rewarding a guy who's played really well in Archer Seelovs.
Yeah, that's where the messaging communication is massive. That's an area where I think this coaching staff has excelled in. And to your point, Seelovs is also waiver exempt for next season. Yeah. So you could have a hybrid situation where he spends part of his time backing up in Vancouver, part of his time getting a starter's workload in Abbotsford as well. If you're not convinced that, okay, we want him as the full-time backup and more that you want him just as another option, then you could go out and sign, let's say, a cheaper backup.
Yeah.
And then have almost like a three goalie system where, again, because he loves his waiver exempt, you can shuttle him up and down as you see fit.
Yeah, exactly. So there's a lot of flexibility. There's a lot of options, and we'll see what the Canucks go with. And yes, the chat is already talking about how Quads is already trying to stir up a goalie controversy right before the playoffs. No, not quite. Oh, on Thatcher Demko, I did think this was interesting. I think Rick Dhaliwal, our friend over at Donnie and Dolly, he said he doesn't expect Demko to play Saturday or Monday. I do think Demko is going to be in by sometime next week. That's what I think. I'm not reporting. I guess I am reporting to some extent. I would be surprised is what I'll say. I would be surprised if Demko isn't in next week. And again, it looks like he's going to get his three starts that I've been harping on. He's going to get his 3-4 starts before the playoffs, hopefully. Actually, will he? Yes, he will. Well, maybe he'll get three. No, he'll maybe get four. Okay, anyways, I'm not going to keep doing this looking at the Canucks schedule. Let's get to Dave Hall, our prospect guru, who is joining us now, and he's got a lot of updates for us because there's been a lot of stuff going on in prospect land. Dave, thanks for waiting patiently for us. I know we had to talk Archer Seelovs, which I know you like doing. How happy are you for Archer Seelovs, a guy you've covered a lot, finding some success at the NHL level so far?
Well, first off, thanks for having me. And I just got to say, I can just see the glimmer in your eye talking about goalies. So it's nice to see Quads, but I love it. I'm fully agree with Harm that I think he's fully deserved a shot at next game. And it's more so, you know, a lot of people are like, oh yeah, he's beat the Ducks and the Arizona Coyotes. That's great. But I agree that he should now be given the shot to go at the higher club. So let's just see what happens. I'm happy for him.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. We saw what happened when someone touched Jonathan Lekkerimäki in front of Elias Pettersson. Obviously, he went after him, showed a little camaraderie there. We like to see that. But other than that, what have you seen from the two newest prospects out in Abbotsford?
Well, that's what we've seen, at least from Elias Pettersson. Like, I don't want to put this label on too early, but I just don't see a world where he's not a fan favorite if he's not already over in Abbotsford. He comes over 6'4" body, and he's just already just slid right in, and he doesn't look out of place. We already kind of touched on in previous times that I was on where I thought that, you know, the smaller ice might actually cater to his transition even more so because of just his, you know, meat and potatoes, just a aggressive demeanor. And so far it has. They don't count hits in the AHL, but he's got to be tracking upwards of 10 already in his three games. It's just, he's slid right in. He's closing gaps well. He's not giving the forwards any day. And even when he's not delivering big hits, he's still just being a jerk out there and delivering little cheap shots in the backs. And overall, it's just been a really impressive performance. Early in the first game, couple games, we saw a few instances where he was beat a little bit to the side and was caught chasing a little bit, but that was more so in the first couple games. And even since then, he's clean that up. And one thing that I don't want people to sleep on is his ability to produce offense too. Like, I don't anticipate him to be an offensive contributor, but if you haven't seen his assist from last night, his first point, it's the perfect example of what I was talking about. He's got really good awareness. And before that puck even gets to him at the blue line, he's already looking towards Tristan Nielsen for that cross ice pass. And he just delivers it perfectly. So expect the bulliness and, you know, the big assertive defenseman, but don't sleep on his ability to make those passes too. And as for Lekkerimäki, it's been like, when you're looking at his stat sheet, yes, 0 points in 4 games, you know, it's not great, but when you're watching the games, it's actually been a lot better of a transition than anticipated. You know, yes, he's not scoring goals, but it's not for a lack of not trying. He's getting shots off. He's getting opportunities. He made a beautiful saucer pass to Max Sasson last night to spring him on a breakaway, and they're just not going in for him. So yes, the offense isn't there, but what we were so worried about him transitioning for, aka his size, whether he could withstand, you know, the rigors of facing AHL defensemen, he's looked right at home. He's almost playing a little too timid, and it's not a bad thing because he's being super defensively responsible. He's winning puck battles. He's got good puck protection. And so overall, it's been a really impressive transition. Yes, we want the goals and the assists to happen, but overall, I think it's been a pretty solid start.
Okay, so Atu Ratu is on a heater right now. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, I mean, there's like, he's got, what is it, 17 points in 14 games. So he's over a 2-point clip over his last 7 games. So yeah, he's firing. And what I really like about his heater is it's not just before he was getting a lot of secondary assists, and he's still getting secondary assists, but what I really like is the goals that he's scoring. He's known for his two-way and passing ability, but he's been showing that once he gets that time to put that shot off, he's releasing them like crazy. And he's getting some snipes out there. So that's one thing I've liked. And overall, I mean, Colleton, now that everyone's getting kind of fully healthy and they're getting bodies back, they've been putting the band back together with him, Sasson, and Carlson. And as a trio, we saw this back in November and December. As a trio, these three, they just have it figured out. They just work off each other so well. And so that's really helped. That's really helped in their transition and kind of jump-starting Ratu going through.
The Canucks recently signed Tally Mueller to an ESC. What have you seen from him this season? I know that you've been a fan of what he's accomplished as a prospect.
Yeah, I have been a fan. And I do just want to reiterate that I talk about him a lot, and I think he's a really good prospect. And it's not so much that I think he's going to be this, you know, extravagant NHL producer, but I just think that based on where he went last year and some of the questions that a lot of people, including myself, had on, you know, this scouting staff for drafting him a double overager, a 20-year-old in the fourth round, there were some questions going in. And so right off the bat, when I first started watching him this season, the first thing that came that kind of intrigued me was his motor. He's always moving. He's a good skater. He's just constantly moving his feet, and he's willing to play that two-way game. But then, so that's what originally brought me in. But what even got me, what kind of really brought me in was he's got nasty hands, and he's got this really underrated shot where he can all of a sudden just blast this one-timer out of nowhere. And so, you know, in terms of transition this year, I'm not anticipating too much. You know, if he makes it into a game, you know, I'm anticipating a little bit of a, you know, bottom six role. But unlike someone like, let's say, you know, Aiden McDonough, who came in as a polished 23-year-old goal scorer, somewhat one-dimensional, who had a really tough transition in his first couple months, Ty Mueller, he maybe not the goal scorer that McDonough is, but he's way more well-versed in the whole, he's versatile, and he can kind of play that all-around game. So overall, I like the way he plays. He's got a good motor and just a solid two-way player.
Dave, we're having some technical difficulties, so we're going to have to wrap it up. But we appreciate you taking the time, and we'll get you back soon.
No problem. Thanks, guys.
There he is, Dave Hall. And yeah, we're going to work through this. This is what happens. We get an Oilers fan as our producer. No, I kid. I kid. But Aaron, you're going to have to walk us through this.
Mic working? Yes, it is. People can hear me, right? Oh, this is interesting. I don't know if people can hear me, but this is interesting for you to hear, Harm.
Aaron says we're good now.
Yeah? Oh, we're good. All right. So people can... okay, so my camera's off, but my mic is working. Okay, I got to catch up to this. We're going to get to anyone else, but I want to read this comment from Ty David first. I caught up to the live. It's a shock going from 2x to normal speed. You sound like you're talking very slow now. A lot of people listen to the podcast on like twice double speed. Do you do that?
I've tried 1.5, which isn't bad, but I've never tried double. Double, I feel like, would be too much for me.
Yeah, double's way too fast. I do 1.25, and I used to listen to audiobooks once in a while, and I have to listen to those on accelerated speed. I don't do it the other way. Okay. Okay, sorry for the technical difficulties, folks. I think we're good. We're good now. But anyways, let's talk about our next sponsor. Yeah, this is crazy. Okay. Let's talk about our sponsor. It is 4Winds Brewing. You've heard us talk about them a lot, but it's not a light the lamp contest day. So I am going to tell you about one of their delicious IPAs, and that is Juxtapose. Looking for something hoppy for your fridge this weekend? We recommend you check out the 4Winds Juxtapose IPA, a 2x silver medal winner at the World Beer Cup. This juicy IPA is tropical and funky at the same time. Available at liquor stores across the province or for home delivery anywhere in BC through the online shop at 4windsbrewing.ca. Okay, we have got quite a few things to get to. Yeah, and people, Dave's in our chat now as well. Dave's in the YouTube live chat talking about how his face was frozen a couple times ago, and now his audio was messed up, and our audio got messed up, and so did our cameras. It was a weird little transition there, but we'll get to it. We've got a fun segment here. We're going to size up the Norris Trophy race to this point. Harm, last night, Quinn Hughes was phenomenal. I talked about how he's heating up at the right time. Obviously, this matters in the context of the Canucks and the Canucks season, but I also think it matters in the context of there's a lot of voters out there that are going to look at game logs. You know this. There's a lot that are going to look at game logs, say, okay, I don't watch every game Quinn Hughes plays. How did these guys finish their seasons? Did they finish strong or did they just have hot starts to the season, right? Like, are they, you know, are they first half merchants, one might say? I don't think you can say that about Quinn Hughes, especially when he's got three goals in his past two games.
I don't even think this is a race at this point.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Really?
I think, honestly, any answer other than Quinn Hughes as number one for Norris this season is wrong, and it's not close.
Wow. So, okay.
Like, I don't think it's close.
I like that you're saying this, obviously, because I'm a giant homer, but like I think we're going to see a lot of first place votes from our colleagues around the continent talk about Cale Makar. Like, I think we're going to see
they will be wrong.
So, okay, I like this. I like this version of Harm. I like this a lot. And as I said earlier, I was doing this, and of course I was going to come in and just talk about how Hughes is deserving of the award, but I was worried you were going to come in and say, well, actually, Cale Makar's done this at a better per 60 rate, but it's not just the analytics that prove my point that are the right ones today. It's all of them.
It's not even just about the analytics. It's like, I can't think of, from an objective perspective, where Makar has been better than Hughes, right? Really? Like, Hughes has more points, but the catch is defensively. This is where Hughes is really separated from Makar. I've got it here. So there are 226 NHL defensemen that have played at least 405.5 minutes mm-hmm. this year. Makar ranks 186th in surrendering three goals against per hour. He's getting lit up defensively. And also keep in mind, he's glued to Nathan MacKinnon, who is going to finish top three in Hart Trophy voting. Mm-hmm. And the Avs in Makar's minutes are somehow still only plus six at 5-on-5, where you compare that to Quinn Hughes. A, his defensive metrics are elite. I just did a story today for The Athletic nationally looking at which defensemen have had the strongest defensive impact going through a variety of metrics. Like, I ran an initial filter, who averages top 4 minutes, who plays tougher than league average matchups, and then who surrenders goals against at a below league average rate. And then from there, looking at evolving hockey's defensive impact relative to, according to expected goals against. And Hughes, his pure defensive impact, he ranks among the top defensemen this year. So even purely ignoring the offense, ignoring the point production, Hughes defensively has been one of the top blue liners in the NHL this season.
Do you think this is enough to get him out of tier 3B?
I mean, if this isn't enough, And Dom, in all seriousness, has already admitted that he was wrong about that.
Of course, yeah. Where would you actually put Hughes in like a ranking of defense? Obviously, this season he's 1A. But like, if Dom's doing his model next year, and his model really likes Quinn Hughes, and I think now he's going to have that agreement from everybody that he talks to that Quinn Hughes is an elite defenseman. Like, do you think Hughes is in that upper echelon now?
Oh yeah,
like, he's got to be 1A.
Yeah, it's a big three at the top. It's Makar, it's Hughes, and it's Fox. All three have won Norris trophies. All three are in the same category of young elite defensemen that broke into the league at the same time.
3B is going to haunt Dom for the rest of his life, unfortunately. Like, he has admitted he's wrong, and his model even liked it more than... Anyways, I like Dom. We had him on the show. Good dude. And it was like November we had him, and he was like, okay, I was wrong. Like, he was very... He wasn't like, let's see how the rest of the season goes. He knew pretty early on that he was incorrect about putting him in tier 3B. But hey, it's going to be a tier 1A. And rightfully so. So this segment was to look at the Norris Trophy race. We ran a graphic there. If you could pull it back up, Aaron, Hughes is just better in basically every category except time on ice per game. And he's only behind by 11 seconds. And that's it. Every other stat and then points, power play points, excuse me. That's what that is. Power play points as well. Makar has one more than Hughes does.
Yeah, it's... Offensively, Hughes has more points. Makar has more goals. You can give him that. He has three more than Quinn. But Hughes has been the better play driver. He's been miles better defensively. His all-around impact. Like, put it this way, Makar hasn't even been the best player on his own team.
That's a really good point. And Quinn Hughes has undoubtedly been this team's MVP.
McKinnon has by far been the engine of that Avs team. Hughes is to the Canucks what McKinnon is to the Avs this year.
Yeah. Hart Trophy votes? Like, I think
it'll be tough this year. It's tough
because there's so many good ones. And I'm starting to look at what my ballot might look like. And sometimes I'll put my first place Norris winner as my fifth place Hart. There's so many good options for the Hart. It's going to be tough.
Yeah. We'll have to go through it. Maybe he'll get a fourth or fifth place on my ballot. I don't think Quinn's going to be top three for Hart Trophy though.
JT Miller Selke votes? A little more deserving?
No, no.
Oh, come on. He's going to get them. Some Pittsburgh writer or like who? Anyways, I don't want to call people out, but some random East Coast writers just throw JT Miller a Hart Trophy and Selke he's gotten before.
Yeah.
I think he's got a case for like a fifth place Selke vote this year, like more than a couple.
Maybe if it was based off the first month of the season.
That's fair.
But since then, I mean, look, he's been fine defensively, but he's not been this defensive juggernaut.
Yeah, he hasn't been a defensive dynamo like a lot of the guys we're going to be voting for.
Yeah, he doesn't even play first unit PK.
Fair enough. We'll still see. He'll get a record Selke votes. I bet you anything that's what we see. He'll get the most Selke votes he's ever gotten in his career this year. And I won't even vote on it because I know we're making a little deal here. I won't put him on mine. I don't think. Well, I haven't done it yet, but we'll see. Anyways, on Hughes, yeah. I just think this is a race that we've been talking about since the start of the season. And it really just feels like, especially with his recent performances, and hey, that goal total's rising, right? Fingers crossed it gets to 20. But it feels like Hughes is just pulled ahead and it's now Hughes's award. I don't even say Hughes's award to lose because he is like, I don't know what could happen over the final six games of the season for Hughes to lose the spot at first for this award.
Yeah, it's again, it's not close to me. And I've said this pretty consistently all year. Also keep in mind that I'm the type of person that at the start of the season I said, and even now you could argue that if you asked NHL GMs, which defenseman would you like to start a franchise with? A lot of them are voting Cale Makar, and I wouldn't blame them at all because he's right-handed defenseman. He's won a Conn Smythe. If you look at his track record before the season, Makar's been the better defenseman than Hughes. We're all willing to admit that, but the Norris Trophy is just looking at this year. Mm-hmm. And if you're just looking at this year, Quinn Hughes, his impact has been far superior to Makar's.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I thought this segment would be a little more dicey. Like I thought you'd be fighting me against Hughes, but no, you're fully on board and I absolutely love it. It's a good segment. I like it.
I kind of killed the segment though, didn't I? I
was like, no, you didn't.
Like, oh, let's
you provided, the race. You provided actual like reasons, rather than me being like, yeah, I think he's better. Just like coming in here with my vibes. I thought I was going to have to fight you. So I had a couple stats ready, but as you saw in those graphics, everything is coming up Hughes, and we'll see how it finishes out. But yeah, I just wanted to get that in there that I thought the Norris Trophy race really is no longer a race, and that Quinn Hughes is going to run away with this, deservingly so. And a lot of Hughes for heart love in the chat. Speaking of the chat, let's get to our next segment, which we like to call Anyone Else, presented by DoorDash. It's our listener's chance to get involved and hit us up in the YouTube live chat. And it's also our listener's chance to get 25% off and zero delivery fees on their first order of $15 or more when they download the DoorDash app and enter code NATION25. That's all capital letters NATION and the numbers 25. Double Dash makes it easy. You can order from multiple restaurants or stores in the same delivery without additional delivery fees, so everyone can get what they want and need. Okay, I like this. We have some stuff in the chat as I just tweak up my camera a little bit because I don't like I'm on the laptop camera. It feels like I'm doing a remote episode, but I'm not. We're in studio. My camera just died halfway through the show. But anyways, I like this from Nar, obviously a regular listener of the show. Who wants to go on the record with a prediction for Philip Aronik's next contract? We won't tell Saravalli. I will tell you, I know Saravalli is dead set that Hronik's getting $8 million. And I absolutely, like, I agree with him that, yeah, his agent probably really wants over $8 million. And that's probably his market value. I think the Canucks will sooner trade Philip Hronik than sign him to an $8 million deal. I do. I think they will move Hronik if it's a, hey, if you're not going to give us eight, move us, trade us. I think the trade is what ends up happening.
I mean, if I were in management's shoes, especially with how clever they've been with their pro scouting decisions since this management regime took over, I would trust in my scouting staff's ability to find me a defenseman to play with Quinn Hughes rather than paying Hronik an $8 million contract. I mean, the Canucks just got rid of their anchor contracts.
Yeah.
They just finally cleaned up the books. And when Rutherford first took over, how many times did he stress, we can't fix the team until we get the cap sorted?
Yeah.
They finally got the cap sorted. They cannot afford to clog up the cap again with anchor contracts. And Hronik at $8 million plus, again, I can understand why his market value dictates that based off his production, ice time, arbitration case, etc. But I'm not convinced as a contract the Canucks should sign if it's going to be $8 million times 7 years or something.
I absolutely agree with you. And that's just what it comes down to for me. If I'm giving a prediction, I'll say if Philip Hronik goes to, and it's not the open market per se, but if Philip Hronik gets a sign and trade, Philip Hronik's going to sign for 8 years at $8.25 million with the Columbus Blue Jackets or whoever it is that bucks up for Philip Hronik. If he signs a contract with the Canucks, I am going to say it is not a hair over $7.5 million per year.
Wow, bold.
What, you think higher or lower?
Well, the threshold I'm looking at is Hughes cap hit, which is, I think, is 7.85. That, as in, like, it has to be below that.
Yeah.
In terms of, if I was in the Canucks shoes,
yeah,
the number that I would be comfortable with, it has to be below that. Like, must be.
So, somewhere in the middle of our...
Maybe.
Of 7.8 and 7.5? Maybe like
7.75 or something. Even though that's rich, man.
That's rich? That's too much.
I still don't know if I like that contract.
Yeah, exactly. It's too much, man.
And like, here's the thing too, is we just saw Arizona, for example. I was thinking about this like a couple weeks ago, and I was thinking a player like Sean Durzi, who the Coyotes acquired for a second round pick, right shot defenseman, offensively inclined, not the most reliable defensively. You're telling me that if you took, let's say, Sean Durzi and had acquired him instead of Hronik, hypothetically, plugged Durzi in with Hughes, that Durzi couldn't give you like 80 to 90% of what Hronik
exactly done.
And I'm not saying that as a, oh, they should have traded for Durzi.
Totally, totally.
Hronik. The point I'm trying to make is if a guy like a player of Durzi's caliber is usually going to be available every offseason because it's not that spectacular, but if you could find a guy like that, stick him next to Hughes, then that maybe goes to show you that Hronik, despite the scarcity of right shot top four defensemen, maybe you can replace that player easier than you anticipated. And it doesn't even necessarily have to be an offensive guy, right? A guy like Matt Roy could become a free agent this year. Defensive defenseman on the second pair with the Kings. If you want more of a defensive stud looking to contract, he could get, or a Brett Pesce or Chris Tanev.
the Canucks are, again, when you're making this decision on Hronek, it's not just what's our number that we want Hronek at. It's what are our alternative options?
Yep.
And you have to pit all of those options against each other and decide what are we getting the most bang for buck on.
Similar question, this one. Anyone else? How much are you willing to give Joshua this offseason? I think we've answered this recently. I think like a 3x3 I'm looking at and saying it's the most I'd pay and I'd be okay.
He might command more term than that, though. I was thinking about like...
Okay, interesting, the term. Yeah, yeah.
Like, I was thinking about how Pierre Engvall, for example, and Engvall has had an extra year of top nine production before he got an extension with the Islanders. But he got 3 million times like 7 years or something.
Mm.
Or like you look at what Nick Paul got in Tampa, right? 3.15 times 7 or 8 years as well. I wonder what type of term Joshua could command if he's going to get longer than 3 years, for example.
Yeah, that's interesting. And I think that's an interesting way to look at it. I mean, I'm looking at it from a perspective of, okay, if you're in Joshua's shoes, you're probably going to be looking for the most term possible.
Oh, yeah.
But if you're the Canucks, you're probably going to avoid signing a guy like that to a 6-7 year deal. Like, unless the cap hit comes way down, because you do need to navigate the lean years of the OAL buyout.
Yeah.
You do need to be careful with that. So, hey, like, I don't know if the cap hit for Joshua after one season of production like this, where again, he's a staple in the lineup. He's playing in the top six right now. I don't know if that's enough to make me say, okay, yeah, 3x6 or 7 years. Like, yeah. I don't know if
to
that's
be clear,
enough.
I'm not saying he's going to get that. I'm just saying
you bring
it may not be as short as three, right? Yeah. Like what if it's 4 years, for example?
Yeah.
Or five.
3x5. Yeah.
If somebody's offering him that in free agency, are you going to be able to match that type thing? Right. And one thing I keep coming back to is when you have depth players that perform at this level, the debate you always run into is, well, these depth players are most valuable to you when they're only making $825,000. Yeah. Like Joshua is right now. And I remember having our conversation with Frank last week where he was leaning toward, well, go out and find the next Joshua, right? Yeah. That's what you kind of have to do when the players at the top of your lineup, like Pettersson, like potentially Hronek, are commanding more dollars. But I look at Joshua and I'm saying, can you really find another guy like that for near league minimum? Because he's got a really unique, rare profile in that he offers secondary scoring. He's scoring at close to a 40-point pace this season. He is one of the NHL's most physical players. Leet is 11th, I think, in hits right now, despite all the time he's missed. He can stick up for guys in fights. He has the type of size and heft along the walls in winning battles that this Canucks forward group doesn't have. A lot of big, heavy wingers that win a lot of those wall battles. And net front offense, if you're going to be a team that prides itself on we recover pucks on the forecheck, we cycle, we funnel pucks back to the point, we take these point shots that are, we're searching for screens, deflections, rebounds, tips, trying to create offense the dirty ways. Well, Joshua's net front offense sort of fits that style. So I don't know. And plus on top of that, he's developed into a first unit PK guy. Like he's above average defensively at this point. Like, can you find a guy that takes all of those guys for near league minimum? I think that's a tough player to replace. And again, I'm not necessarily saying, oh, I'm married to, you have to keep Joshua, but the way he's playing right now, like that's going to be a tough piece to replace if he walks and prices himself out of Vancouver's range.
I'm trying to think of how to make this an interesting enough question for you. Hronek at X or Joshua at X?
So you can't do that, though.
Why not?
Because
I just did it. I didn't come up with a number yet.
Well, then I'd have to ask you, who are my other defensemen? What are my other...
That's your job. You're supposed to be prepared.
Come on. I would need to know Hronek's trade value. Like all these things.
That's fair.
Which I know makes for a boring take, but this is how decisions are made by front offices. It's not,
dude,
just
that's why I tell you I'd be a great owner. I'd be an awesome owner. Just walk into a boardroom. All right, guys, eating an apple or something.
Yeah.
All right, guys. This player or this player, figure it out. I want this one. You tell me why I shouldn't want that one. I'll tell you, I think I want Joshua. Maybe I want Hronek. You never know with me. That's why I'd be a good owner. keep everybody on their toes.
There is a case that Joshua on his next deal could not a guarantee, but could provide more bang for buck value on his next deal compared to Hronek. But again, that doesn't necessarily mean that, oh, you have to prioritize Joshua over Hronek then, because clearly right shot defenseman, even though you think you might be able to find a potential replacement if Hronek prices himself out of Vancouver's range, it's still not an easy position to fill compared to wingers. They are usually more available. I think the biggest risk with Joshua is if some rebuilding team like a Chicago or like a San Jose, it says, oh, we really want this type of player that might thrive in a bigger role, has size, has toughness, can kill penalties, is above average defensively. We're going to like really give him the bag. We're going to give him something like 4 million times 5 years, and we're going to overpay him. That's the point where you're like, okay, even though we really love the player, we have to let him walk.
Yeah. This is an interesting one about Hronek from Nar. If Quinn wins a Norris playing with Hronek, I think it might be worth overpaying him a bit. Maybe a bit. Okay. I'll concede to that. I think that's a fine take to have.
I mean, any contract you sign, even if it's quote unquote friendly, right? Like you get him at 7.5 as a cap hit, which considering the value of his arbitration case, you would look at and go, that's a bit below market value. That's still, and this is where it's so tricky, right? Is there's a difference between what Hronek's leverage dictates he should make, which is a really high number. And if you're strictly looking at, again, his arbitration case, how close he is to unrestricted free agency, that's where the argument of, oh, he should be an $8 million defenseman all day comes in, right? That's true. And yet at the same time, it's also true that even though his numbers and his leverage might dictate that that's the number that he could earn on his next contract, he's not actually worth that when you consider his value as a player.
That's the question. We'll close out anyone else on this.
Like you can get $7.5 million.
Yeah.
And that's technically relative to his arbitration case, how close he is to free agency. That's a quote unquote discount.
Yeah.
And yet $7.5 million for Hronek is still a really hefty number that he may be a defenseman that over the lifespan of his contract that may only be worth $7 million per year.
Yeah.
So you understand how that's, it's kind of a contradiction where, I'm not going to repeat the explanation.
Well, again, but it's an interesting thing because this is a question we have is what's your overall opinion on Hronek so far? His stats and analytics are decent, but his performance on the ice seems to differ. IMO, I'll answer first. Hasn't been able to hold down a pairing all season long on his own. He's had a few opportunities and it's been, I don't want to call it a disaster. I think that's a little bit too reactive, but hasn't been good every time we've seen it.
Yeah, he's the type of player that, because Quinn Hughes is one of the best defensemen in the NHL, Hronek can excel in a supporting top pair role. But if he was with a lesser defenseman, he would not be thriving on a contending team's top pair.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's as simple as that.
And if you're paying $8 million,
top dollar,
you need that defenseman to be thriving on a top pair, regardless of if he's playing with a partner of Hughes and his caliber or not.
Yeah. And as a potential owner, I'll tell you, I want to pay Philip Hronek like $3 million a year for 8 years.
Yeah. Okay.
Jesse C, Quads as an owner would be in violation of the cap constantly, creating shell companies to pay guys on the side, circumventing the rules for sure.
I was going to say you would for sure be saying, well, what if we give this guy, I got buddies over at this company, let's give him a sponsorship deal. $5 million a year, make up the difference.
We'll pay him in exposure.
And I'd be telling you, Quads, this is extremely illegal. We cannot do this. This is in violation of the CBA. And you'd be like, I don't care, make it happen.
Yeah, go shake his hand. You got a couple $100 bills in your hand. Or gift cards. Gift cards, that's the real way to do it, right? Is like gift cards to Holt Renfrew.
Yeah, or you'd be like, tell Hronek he has to sign for $6 million per year on his next deal. But then when he retires, he has a front office job where he's going to be making millions per year.
I love that. Is that against the rules?
Probably is.
You don't know for sure, though.
I don't know for sure.
It's a good idea. And it's also, you know what else isn't against the rules? If I were an owner, it's not against the rules to treat your players really well either. I'd be like, hey, sign here for less, but free dinners at all my restaurants, which I would open if I were an owner. Hell, the owner out here, I was just talking about Elisa and like Blue Water Cafe. They own their restaurants. I don't know if it's against the rules. I'm not saying this is what the Canucks are doing. I'm just saying if I were an owner and I wasn't worried about breaking any rules, which I would be at some point, but I'd be like, hey, free meals at all my restaurants.
Buy a massive apartment complex with a bunch of units and give them to your...
there you go. Players. You get to be a landlord. Philip Hronek, sign for less.
For free.
Because you get to be a landlord.
Well, he'd be the free tenant.
No. He could be a tenant, but then he could also manage the properties for you and he could make the money too.
That would be, I think we'd be moving past the gray area.
We might have to read the CBA a little bit, but is there really something on the CBA or the agreement between players union and the NHL that you can't make a player a landlord?
Yes.
No, there's not. You show me in the CBA where it says that.
It's going to be vaguely worded enough that.
I found a loophole.
No, you haven't. Call Kelly McCrimmon and see if his owner, Bill Foley, knows.
All right. Okay. Anything else? Yeah. Okay. This is great. Karin in the chat. I love how the title of this episode is about Quinn and it quickly became the Hronek show. Yeah. Jesse C. Quad's giving everyone Mariners tickets. There you go. Although if I gave the Mariners tickets those right now, yeah, they'd be like, I don't want to sign here. Anyways. Okay. Anything else that you wanted to get to before we close it? Oh, this one thing. Can you pull this up, Aaron? I almost called you Grady. Pull up this graphic that I had, or not graphic, excuse me. It's a little thing from Jay Fresh. He did the worst defense pairs of 2007, 2008 to now. He did the best forward lines, and you will see listed at number 7, but by far with the most time on ice together is Alex Burrows, Daniel Sedin, and Henrik Sedin. That line, and again, it's worded weirdly. Obviously, Henrik was the center, but you look at the other lines, the top one of Chris Kunitz, Pascal Dupuis, and Sidney Crosby, like, their time on ice together, 1,037 minutes of ice time together. Again, a lot of these top lines, they all start with a one. If they don't start with a 9 or an 8 or a 7, they all start with a 1. None of them have played over 1,500 minutes together. The Burrows and Sedin line together, 2,815 total time on ice together. Those guys spent more time with each other on the ice than most guys spent time on ice in the NHL, like in their entire careers. And that line was absolutely magical. Like we said here, according to those numbers from Jay Fresh, 7th best line of, I keep wanting to say of all time since 2007, 2008 of the past 16 years.
Given their longevity, I would even argue higher because, for example, you got the Lindholm, Gaudreau, Tkachuk line. That's technically second place, but again, less than 1,000 minutes together. The longevity matters a lot there. And just a 70.8% control of 5-on-5 goals
ridiculous.
Is nuts. It's unheard of these days.
Exactly. You're not going to see a line like that again. And I mean, the current ones coming in below it at like 69.8% or as I say,
69.8.
Oh, is that what it
is
says?
One for the LA one.
Yeah, the LA one. That's what I'm trying to read. That's not right. Is it? Aaron, can you zoom in?
Oh, that's an error.
That's an error from Jay Fresh.
Caught live on the show.
Yeah. Wow. That should be higher.
No. It's not. Oh. Because look, it's taking the average. Because.
Oh. Okay.
It's taking the average of their goal share and expected goal share.
Okay. Anyways, we tried to call out Jay Fresh and it lasted about 3 seconds. Anyways, I wanted to highlight that because we talked about how the Canucks had the worst defensive pair of all time. You could make the argument that they have had the best forward line of the past 16 years in Burrows and the Sedins. And those three just made magic with each other every time they were on the ice. They were part of the reason I fell in love with hockey.
And I'm not going to lie, especially as a kid growing up, you take it for granted. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, this is unbelievable. It's a treat. But especially because you're a kid at the time. You haven't lived through the dark days of the Messier regime.
Yeah.
Not regime. His time. Yeah, in
basically regime.
Yeah.
We've heard the stories.
Like you just expect to be a good team every year with and not realizing that there's so many future Hall of Famers on this roster.
Yeah, exactly. Future Ring of Honors. and Alex Burrows. Anyways, I just thought it was really interesting. I thought we had to bring it up, but we'll close it out there for my co-host Armin Dial and our guest producer, Aaron Bordado. My name is Dave Guglielmi. Thank you so much for listening to another episode of the Canucks Conversation. Canucks Conversation with Harmon and Quads brought to you by the Toyota BZ4X. The BZ4X's fresh look is just an added bonus to its range since you can drive up to 406 kilometers on a single charge. That's enough to get you from Kitsilano to Whistler or Kamloops to Kelowna and back and still be home in time for the game. Now that's what we'd call electric. The best part, by choosing electric, you can get up to $11,000 in rebates and incentives. The BZ4X are in stock and selling quickly, so make sure to visit shoptoyota.ca or your local Pacific Toyota dealer to get your hands on one. Canucks Conversation is live Monday through Friday, every weekday at 2 p.m. over on the Canucks Army YouTube channel. Make sure you like, subscribe, and interact in the YouTube live chat every day with us, folks.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.